chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven in the middle of it. Rest make the heaven in the middle. We are. Rest make the heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a wonderful program going this evening. We've got the FTX thing that is going ongoing. Freed is saying there's no fraud here and all this, you know, and then he was interviewed over an hour on a book, a type of promotional deal by the New York Times. And we'll put that link up for everyone to link to, and they can see the whole interview. It's just nonsense. What his answers are just gobbledygook, you know. But anyway, we'll have that up there. But Greg Reese is going to come in here with a couple of glimpses and exposés here. Balenciaga is one, and then Ye, or whatever. Very critical of Ye. He was on the Alex Jones show recently. But he said he's the king. He's the king. Yeah, sure, he's the king. I mean, what an ego. You know what I mean? He's got some money and people just clamoring to be around him, I guess. I don't know. He doesn't influence me. I'm not impressed by him whatsoever. But anyway, going to start off this program with a little bit of music by Jamie Lawrence. He's out in Hawaii, and you know the Mauna Loa volcano is erupting right now, and there is a very beautiful song that he's going to sing called Mauna Loa. But here we go with Jamie Lawrence.
Come on.
What a beautiful song. Jamie Lawrence really does well on that. He's got a wedding service out in Hawaii. You might look him up on the web. But we'll have a link up there on our page where you can listen to his other very beautiful songs. And we'll get a link to where you can order some of his CDs. And yeah, the CD thing. But anyway, coming up next is Greg Reese on Balenciaga. It was an advertising firm that hit into child pornography is being accused of. But here we go with Greg Reese's expose on and his comments on that. Now, here we go with Greg Reese on Balenciaga.
The evil abuse of children that the world is waking up to today has been going on for many, many years. The Industrial Revolution was fueled by hundreds of thousands of children sold off of orphan trains at local fairs across the country, many of which were born within orphan asylums and referred to as foundlings. History shows us that not everyone sees an innocent child as someone to protect, and the Balenciaga scandal is exposing a hidden cult that celebrates the death and torture of children. The same photographer who placed the Supreme Court ruling on child porn in the Balenciaga ad that sparked this whole recent scandal also did a photo shoot for France's Double magazine that featured a traumatized-looking child having her passport photo taken for a trip to the same Disney cruise line that provides snorkeling trips off the coast of Epstein's Island, otherwise known as Little St. James. Both photo shoots appear to have been styled by Russian stylist Lada Volkova, a highly celebrated stylist in the fashion industry who works for Vogue, Adidas, Chanel, and has been a top stylist for Balenciaga since 2014. She has deleted her Instagram account since the scandal hit, but archived images show a dark appreciation for child abuse, images of violent pedophilia, child torture, child disembowelment, Satanism, and cannibalism. Many of these images are appreciated by her rich and famous designer friends, Gosha Rubchinsky and Marc Jacobs, both accused of peddling pedophilia in their own work. A recent video shows what appears to be fake babies sold in blood-spattered Balenciaga swag.
What's in your bag?
In my bag, like shop or maybe.
Like,
can we do a what's in your bag?
Yeah, can we do a what's in the bag, please?
Should I hold it for you and you can take things out?
Excuse me.
Yeah. Look, there's like when she starts to drive. Like then when she's gonna pee, I don't know. Then when she's boring,
she's boring.
Yeah, everything possible.
Right as the Balenciaga scandal goes viral, Hollywood actress Nicole Kidman, who was recently glamorizing eating bugs, proudly releases her own Balenciaga ad on Instagram. From what we are learning about these people, it seems strange for us to put our faith in any single one of them. And by all appearances, this wasn't an accident. It seems to be another demoralizing psyop.
The Balenciaga stuff just gets worse and worse. Check this out.
The people that recruited all of the models for Balenciaga's runway show was a woman called Rachel Chandler, who has been on Jeffrey Epstein's island. She's even posted a picture on Instagram of CCTV footage back in 2013 bragging about being on the island.
This stuff's got me wondering if all high-end fashion brands are just fronts for human trafficking. So most of us know by now that Balenciaga got themselves canceled by having BDSM bears photographed with children. The same style bears were featured in one of their last runway shows, which was held in a mud pit, as if the brand weren't disgusting enough. But who opened for the show? Yeah, Kanye West was pretty close with Balenciaga before they got canceled for that last photo shoot. Kanye's been all over the place for years. Everybody knows that. I'm sure he's been through a lot. I feel for him, but let's keep our eyes open, yeah?
It's a very small club, and yet the majority of us still seem to obsess over them, like royalty, which begs the question, do we have any power? And if we someday find that we do, what are we going to do about this evil? Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Yeah, this thing broke, and then they pulled it back off of the web, said it was a mistake and everything else. But what a fraud. Now, this is Greg Reese saying Yee or whatever his name is, and he's very critical about him being connected to a lot of these international people. But here we go with Greg Reese on Yee.
During Kanye West's appearance on the Alex Jones show, he praised Hitler while reading the Bible. He spoke about Zionists, but failed to mention how they worked hand in hand with the Nazis to create Israel. He spoke out against porn, but begged God to allow him his supermodel habit. And the entire time, he wore a Balenciaga-styled BDSM mask without ever mentioning his close relationship with them. It was the epitome of cognitive dissonance. And as the political right praise Kanye as a Christian, the political left attack him as a racist, both sides dancing together in gay fascination with the celebrity. This is also called idol worship, and humans have a weak spot for it, although few will ever admit it.
Bring in the clowns. There will be clowns.
And while satiated with their bread and circus, one of Kanye's biggest benefactors, the CCP, is able to quietly round up thousands of protesters and disappear them without disturbing the sleeping masses. The China Show on YouTube has been doing a great job of covering this. The protests are nationwide, and they are directed against Xi and the entire CCP.
Ren Men Wan Sui. In China, you'll hear Gong Chan Dan Wan Sui, which
yes.
means like
Communist Party.
Long live the Communist Party. They're saying
long live the people.
Yes. It's things like this that really you would never see in China, because the repercussions for doing this sort of thing are drastic in China.
For the first time in decades, we are seeing a united solidarity among the people.
He's saying, give me liberty or give me death. Okay, that's what he's shouting. And you've got people actually chanting along with him, okay, which is normally not the case.
Yeah.
Because people are like, holy crap, if someone's doing that, they're like, he's crazy, stay away from me, I don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But the important thing is what happens when the police do finally arrive. They rescued him. And I mean, this is the first time I've ever seen anything like this happen in China.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And it's happening all over China.
We have Lanzhou, we have Chongqing, we have other parts of Guangzhou, which were already protesting.
Yes.
We have Beijing. We have third tier, fourth tier, fifth tier cities. We have top tier universities down to low level vocational schools.
Yeah.
We have people in the streets. We have officials being kidnapped out of government buildings. We have people parading through the streets. We have people tearing down police stations. We have PLA deployed, People's Liberation Army. We have SWAT teams. We have this across the entire country.
The reason we've only seen a glimpse of this massive protest is the CCP's censorship. They routinely stop people on the train and check their phones for VPNs. And they jam the signals once a protest breaks out.
They're sending signal jammers into places of protest in order to, you know, stop people's cell phones so they can't send messages, they can't send videos.
And people are coming into massive clashes just right in the street, and people are getting cell phone videos out before the signal jammers can show up. We're seeing stuff come to a head, and then it just stops.
And because everyone is required to have their mobile phone apps in order, the police simply switched off the apps where the protests were happening so that nobody could board the train. Because of the phone apps, they knew exactly where to find everyone. So they knocked on doors, beat people in their own homes, and dragged them off to the quarantine camps. While Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates believe communist China is the model for the world, BlackRock's CEO says that the markets prefer totalitarian government. And here's how it works. If your mobile app goes red, then you have to wait in line for a COVID test. And if you fail that test, then you have to take a bus to your designated quarantine camp, where you will be imprisoned and charged for the entire stay. And so the truth about Ye is that the human herd is and always will be manipulated by our own weaknesses, like our obsession with celebrity and drama. Americans don't seem to care that thousands of people just sacrificed their lives for freedom. They'd rather talk about Ye and Hitler. But soon they won't even have to distract us, because at this rate, we will soon be connected to a worldwide social credit score system, just like China. And both the left and the right will then be able to spend their final days arguing about Kanye and Hitler while locked up together in their very own death camps here in America. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
You'll hear, boy, I tell you, Greg Reese really says it like it is. Anyway, coming up next is a statement about fraud that this Freed guy is saying there was no fraud. There's no fraud at all. And I'm going to follow that by a very, very good, insightful interview that Tucker had with Max Kaiser. And Kaiser knows this Bitcoin business, and he sets it out about they buy and sell from each other and puff the price and create value where there was none before. They just issue the coins. There's nothing to the coins on the issue. They're just on a paper issue. So anyway, this is what Fried had to say about fraud. Here we go. And what a pitiful statement.
Clearly, I made a lot of mistakes or things I would give anything to be able to do over again. I didn't ever try to commit fraud on anyone. I was excited about the prospects of FTX a month ago. I saw it as a thriving, growing business. I was shocked by what happened this month. And, you know, reconstructing it, were there things I wish I had done differently?
Former FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried speaking at the New York Times' Deal Book Summit yesterday, the first appearance since his firm collapsed and billions of dollars went missing. SBF claiming he did not commit fraud after losing billions of investor funds and then fleeing to the Bahamas. Joining me right now is Ohio Congressman, House Financial Services Committee member Warren Davidson. Congressman, it's good to see you this morning. Thanks very much for being here. I know that hearings on FTX are beginning this month. What are you expecting to learn, and what is your reaction to him coming out in the middle of all of this and doing this interview, saying he did not commit fraud?
Well, I think the world is stunned that he's not in custody. I mean, when you look at the level of meltdown and the things that we've already uncovered, you just look at the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from the acting CEO who's coming in putting this together. He's like, this is on a level I've never seen, and he did the Enron restructuring. So that alone should say he should actually be have brought in and be questioned in the United States, not in the Bahamas right now. So I think people suspect there's another layer of two-tiered justice going on, a lot of continuing concern with the Justice Department. And I think it highlights the frustration that many in this space have had with the Securities and Exchange Commission. People do not have confidence that Gary Gensler is focused on solving these problems.
And why is that? Is it because he's been the big donor to the Democrats? Is that why he's not in jail right now?
It's possible, but I think the real issues, this whole space has kind of been hands off for a long time. Darren Soto and I have had a bill since 2018 to try to make it clear, look, some things clearly are securities. They should be regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, and some things aren't, and the Securities and Exchange Commission should stay focused on their lane and get this under control. They're failing in this space. So the real question is it a Gary Gensler thing? Is it a structure of the Securities and Exchange Commission thing? Maybe both. But clearly things, if fraud happened here, we did not have the right structure in place to detect it. I mean, he bought a substantial portion of BlockFi. He bought a broker-dealer. How did those things go through SEC scrutiny and none of this get detected? So I think there are a lot of questions.
Yeah, Todd.
Congressman, there's also the specter of why this guy got to tell his story yesterday at the New York Times summit. Look, I am all for journalism. If you have the opportunity to get a big get like Sam Bankman-Fried and you get to interview him for a journalistic endeavor, I get that. But this was a money-making endeavor, and I just think it sends the wrong message that, yeah, you can defraud people of billions of dollars and get to tell your story, quite frankly, in a friendly environment.
Yeah, not only that, the coverage has been giant fluff pieces from virtually everyone. So people look at the media and go, what's up with this guy? He's got all the... So basically, it kind of shows kind of this woke ideology. If you're down with the program, you're down with the team, well, you get one set of treatment. And if you're not, look what they're doing to Elon Musk.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So who are they more concerned about? Elon Musk? They're not concerned about Sam Bankman-Fried. If they are, it's all, how do we protect our guy?
Yeah, it's really rich to see the Democrats attack Elon Musk and do nothing about TikTok, by the way. Elon Musk is now saying that Twitter has, quote, interfered in elections prior to his takeover of the company. This is the former Twitter safety chief says it was, quote, a mistake to censor the New York Post's report on Hunter Biden's laptop. Yesterday, we spoke with Kentucky Congressman James Comer about Twitter censoring free speech and the cover-up of the Biden family's influence peddlings. Here's what he said. Watch.
The government has no business in censoring free speech. We're optimistic that Elon Musk is going to turn those documents over. I think this is something the White House is very scared of. Joe Biden was receiving benefits through Hunter Biden paying for basic living expenses, repairs to his homes, and things like that. This obviously is something that the president has lied about. He lied about his knowledge of Hunter's shady business dealings.
I mean, this is why they call it the swamp. I mean, they're all in bed together. You've got Elon Musk being attacked because he's not part of the club. And yet, Bankman-Fried is getting away with whatever he did. He's over there speaking. He was a major donor to the Democrat Party. TikTok is a threat to our national security, and there's no problem there, Congress. What is going on with this two-tier system?
Well, I think we all kind of know, and the question is, what are we going to do about it? And so in this next Congress, as we go into the Financial Services Committee, we have to crack down and say, look, our capital markets are the best in the world. They're not going to stay that way if we keep politicizing all this stuff. We need to have a markets that are focused and functional. And we look at, big government loves big business loves big government, and big tech's right there at the intersection of it. The whole idea that there would be a Disinformation Governance Board or Ministry of Truth in the United States of America is appalling. Meanwhile, the European Union is basically expecting it. So China, of course, demands it, and a lot of American companies are complying with these other regimes around the world. And then what they're really wanting to do is impose the same kind of thing on America.
Yeah.
So you have to make it clear to America's bureaucrats that, look, if you're going to censor American citizens who aren't guilty of crimes, you're not national security classified information, then, you know, that could end up being, you know, punishable, maybe even a criminal offense by federal employees.
Well, I mean,
we can't allow this.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point, because corporate America has been funding the expansion of communist China, and this is our number one adversary. Do you think that Apple was directed to replace the everyone option for the AirDrop with a function that only gives users 10 minutes limit in which to receive files? I mean, did his Chinese overlords direct him to make it harder for the protesters to speak and make bigger protests through the Apple AirDrop feature?
Well, no one believes it was market forces, right? No, there was no market demand for that. Mm. It makes it harder to use. So, you know, it's clearly the Chinese Communist Party. And you look at all these corporations, they won't call out China for what China's doing. Even if you look at TikTok, China's party allows one version of TikTok for the Chinese population, and they allow a much more corrosive version in our system. Now, we have a system of free speech. Frankly, Facebook and some of the other big tech companies in America are doing almost the same thing. And I think what they're really worried about is Elon Musk outing them and saying, yeah, we've got the same sort of pipeline going to the government, or at least certain officials within it. And, if Elon Musk is already saying, hey, look, Twitter actually influenced the election outcome because we were coordinating these activities. Talk about a big story, and I think that's what a lot of people are afraid of.
Oh, can you do anything about it? Are you going to look at this when you guys take the majority?
Absolutely. And,
so
as Jamie Comer's talking about,
potentially interfering in elections.
I don't know about Twitter, but big tech. I mean, why look at one company? We look at, you know, what's going on. People are being filtered. I mean, I still remember one of the hearings where Congressman Jordan was saying, you know, with the big tech folks, they're like, well, you're being shadow banned, but it was really the algorithm. They're like, what was in the algorithm? The names Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, Matt Gaetz, and somebody else.
Yep.
And that's exactly what was going on. It was very selectively canceling news of the day and influencers of the day.
That's right. I think I was part of that as well, getting shadow banned. I certainly saw weird things on my own social media accounts. Congressman, we're going to be keeping a spotlight on it. We appreciate your leadership on the subject. Thank you, Warren Davidson, for being here this morning. We'll see you soon.
If there was no fraud committed on anyone, where's the money? Show us the money and tell us how you're going to recompensate people that did actually put their money in there. Now, Max Keiser was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. Here's what he said about how they create these scams. Here we go with that Tucker Carlson and Max Keiser.
Well, for Tucker Carlson today, we sat down with a man who has participated in our finance economy and covered it, and is one of the most honest people we know on those topics. His name is Max Keiser. He's a big Bitcoin investor. And he assessed the Sam Bankman-Fried story for us. Here's part of it.
Sam Bankman-Fried, the key to his empire of fraud is that he created his own play money token called FTT, and he was able to create that without any oversight or any tie to anything underlying it, giving it value whatsoever. And this is a whole cryptographic scam that's been going on with the crypto market where individuals, and he's not the only one, there are many people that create these what are called altcoins or scam coins. And they create, Ether is another one, or Cardano, or XRP. These are all coins that are just created, and then they list these coins on each other's exchange, and then they buy them from each other to create a price, and then they use the enhanced price, which is now as a collateral value, to go buy something like Sam Bankman-Fried did, real estate in the Bahamas.
Right.
Right? So it's a Ponzi scheme. And implied in the Sam Bankman-Fried crisis scam is none other than Gary Gensler over at the SEC, who should have been calling time on this a long ago, but we find out that he's actually involved and that there is some what I would call collusion. And the problem is in America, you have a country that's ruled by a kleptocracy. Every institution in America is tied to Wall Street in some way. They've all been financialized. They all use cheap money. They're all cross-collateraling each other's assets. They're all using that money to buy real assets. And they're all undermining the economy in fundamental ways, which lead to inflation, which lead to unemployment, which lead to all kinds of dysfunctions in the economy, in our medical system, in all across the institutions. It all goes back to essentially the deregulation that happened 40 years ago, which led to the financialization and the over-indebtedness, the over-leveraging of the economy. And now, in 2022, since interest rates are going up, that's the end of the mirage, that the bubble has been popped. And the FTX scandal and the Sam Bankman-Fried scandal was like the last dregs of a 40-year bacchanal in cheap money, no regulation, and crooked bankers.
I guess what he meant when he said crooked bankers, I guess the Fed Reserve is privately owned. So if part of my listening audience doesn't know that, you got to check into that. And since it's been privately owned since 1913, then they've had the control and the power of credit creation. And so actually that's sort of what we're up against in many ways in trying to write this system. It's so top heavy of financial oligarchs, you know what I mean, that control so much through their credit creation system that it's very, very difficult to try to overcome some of this, you know what I mean? And anyway, we're going to start off this next section here, this next clip, with an overall clip that Tucker Carlson explains. We're going to get into the Twitter scandal now. And what's happened is that Elon Musk had just started releasing inner communications and so forth within the Twitter organization that proves absolutely that that all these people were involved together and allied against Trump and spying and everything else to really win the 2020 election, and it looks like it was major election interference and major, probably RICO. I would say that there's probably many RICO violations here. It looks like to me. But anyway, I'm gonna play an overall view that Tucker Carlson came up with, and then we're gonna get into some attorneys, Turley and Gray Jarrett, and a third attorney that will explain some of the real problems that they're going to have because of this Twitter scandal and the manipulation of information that influenced and interfered with the 2020 election. So here we go with this just overall view from Tucker Carlson.
Welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. This is a Fox News Alert. One of the most extraordinary moments in the history of social media is unfolding right now as we speak. And it began when Elon Musk took control of Twitter. When he bought the company, he promised to reveal its corruption, the extent to which Twitter had engaged in politically motivated censorship, including the unlawful, the illegal censorship of American citizens at the direction of the U.S. government. Well, tonight, less than an hour ago, Musk began to make good on that promise. Twitter shared a trove of internal documents with Matt Taibbi of Substack. Those documents are coming out again as we speak, and what they prove so far is very serious. Those documents show a systemic violation of the First Amendment, the largest example of that in modern history. These documents show that, among other things, political officials in the Democratic National Committee were directing censorship at Twitter ahead of the 2020 election. One Twitter official wrote on October 24th, 2020, that he had received, quote, an additional report from the DNC. So the DNC was telling Twitter what to pull off the site, and Twitter was complying. Next morning, to prove it, a Twitter official confirmed the post had been deleted. I grabbed the first one, that Twitter employee wrote. Twitter was also following instructions directly from the Biden campaign in the final days of the presidential campaign. One of the documents proves that officials on the Biden team routinely directed Twitter to remove posts that reflected poorly on Joe Biden. Quote, more to review from the Biden team, read one internal email from a Twitter employee just days before the 2020 election. That email included a list of several Twitter accounts that had criticized Joe Biden. The reply, quote, handled. We just checked. Now, those accounts remain suspended today. So Twitter was permanently censoring users at the request of the DNC and the Biden campaign. That is new. Many suspected it. Now it has been absolutely confirmed by internal documents. And, of course, the New York Post Twitter account was banned. Why? Because they had a story that might have changed the outcome of the 2020 election, and Twitter knew that perfectly well. They had accurate information about Hunter Biden's laptop. The Post reporting directly implicated Joe Biden and the Biden family in an ongoing scheme to sell influence to leverage Biden's job as a government official to sell the prestige and the power of the U.S. government to China and Ukraine. That scheme, that ongoing scheme that unfolded over years, made the Biden family millions of dollars. 10% of that money was reserved, as you know, for the big guy, meaning Joe Biden. So that was information that might have changed the outcome of the election, and that is precisely why Twitter prevented its users from reading it. Twitter went so far as to block its users from privately sharing the New York Post story on Twitter direct message. So anyone attempting to share the story about Hunter Biden's laptop was told it was unsafe. Now, that measure, preventing users from sharing information privately, is something that Twitter reserves in normal circumstances only in the most extreme cases, Taibbi writes, like stopping the transmission of child pornography. But in this case, information that might have hurt Joe Biden's chances of becoming president were invoked. And they were applied even to the sitting president's press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany. Internally, Taibbi writes, quote, the decision was made at the highest levels of the company, but without the knowledge of CEO Jack Dorsey, with former head of legal policy and trust Vijaya Gotti playing a key role. All suspected, now confirmed. Now, in public, Twitter and its many allies and the rest of the media claimed that the New York Post story violated the hacked materials policy that Twitter had on its books. But internally at Twitter, everyone understood that was just a pretext. The laptop had not been hacked, and it wasn't of Russian origin. And by the way, as of right now, it's 8:04 Eastern Time. There is no evidence in this ongoing thread from Matt Taibbi that Twitter had received confirmation from the U.S. government, even, that the laptop was fake or from Russia. They just made it up. According to Taibbi, one official admitted that, quote, hacking was the excuse, but within a few hours, pretty much everyone at Twitter realized that wasn't going to hold, but no one had the guts to reverse it. One communications official at Twitter, Trenton Kennedy, wrote this, quote, I'm struggling to understand the policy basis for marking this, the laptop story, as unsafe. Twitter's former head of trust and safety, UL Roth, explained that Twitter had to censor the story so that Donald Trump would not be reelected president. Quote, the policy basis is hacked material, though, as discussed, this is an emerging situation where the facts remain unclear. Given the severe risks here and the lessons of 2016, meaning Trump could get elected, we're erring on the side of including a warning and preventing this content from being amplified. Huh. Now, this played out to some extent in public. Now we know what was happening within Twitter. But the whole country knew that something was being censored. A lot of people couldn't read it. But it was widely known that Twitter was censoring this. And so, by the way, were many other news organizations. And at that time, Twitter received a communication from a consultant in Washington who had taken an informal poll of members of Congress, Democrats. And the message this person sent to Twitter was, Democrats in Congress support the censorship. And we're quoting, they don't think the First Amendment is absolute. Huh. In other words, sitting members of Congress were encouraging censorship to affect the outcome of a presidential election. That is illegal. It is effectively election rigging. And it is a direct attack on our Bill of Rights by people who have sworn to uphold the Bill of Rights. You gotta hope someone will be held accountable for this. So back to the documents. Within Twitter, others, presumably all voting Democrats, but some with some integrity, kept raising questions about this. Former Vice President of Global Communications Brandon Borman asked, quote, can we truthfully claim this is part of the policy? In other words, is this consistent with the rules? Then the general counsel of Twitter, Jim Baker, that would be the former FBI general counsel, who was directly involved in the FBI's interview with Michael Flynn when his life was destroyed for political reasons, signed off on the continued censorship. The former FBI official signed off. Quote, caution is warranted, said Baker. Let's hope we hear from Mr. Baker in a congressional hearing very soon. So throughout all of this, the record shows, at least as of right now, only one elected official in the entire Democratic Party, that would be Ro Khanna of Silicon Valley, a Democrat, voicing any concern at all. So Khanna reached out to Vijaya Gadde, and here's what he wrote. This seems to be a violation of the First Amendment principles, and I say this as a total Biden partisan. But he was completely blown off by Vijaya Gadde. By the way, good for him. He's a liberal, too, but apparently sort of a real one. Within days, someone called Carl Szabo at the research firm NetChoice advised Twitter executives that on Capitol Hill, Democrats were very happy with this. They supported the censorship. So as we said, this thread exposing internal documents from Twitter, as transcribed with commentary by Matt Taibbi, is still ongoing. It is still flowing forth as we speak, and we'll bring you new information as it comes.
Well, my gosh, they really got them this time. They've got evidence. And Musk is turning over real evidence, real emails between the different parties. Looks like RICO time to me. But anyway, the next clip is a Hannity clip, and there were three people on there that testified. Turley is one attorney, and then Gray Jarrett is another one, and the third one you'll have to listen to the introduction. But anyway, there were three attorneys in there that they give their ideas about what went on this Twitter scandal. But boy, it is breaking loose, but it's not being reported by anyone else hardly. So they're putting a cap on it, trying to, you know, do away with the scandal. So here we go, with these attorneys and their opinions. And Turley is awful good. Here we go next.
All right, tonight with Elon Musk following through on his pledge to increase transparency and freedom on Twitter, more on the left are not happy. Their days of gatekeeping on Twitter are over. Joining us now with Reaction, Fox News contributor Jonathan Turley. Jonathan, you're one of the smartest minds I've seen out there. As you read through this and you see this, what comes to mind? Where are they stepping over the line ethically, morally, and maybe legally?
Well, this has really confirmed some of our worst expectations. You have direct communications from the DNC as well as the Biden campaign, and almost immediate service agreements with Twitter. You know, they send these tweets to be eliminated. They're eliminated within a few hours, and they get back these responses of just handled. And that really captures the problem. You know, all of this was handled. And this back channel has long been suspected. Most of us had little question it existed. But it became even more menacing when this back channel went from being a political ally to the campaign to being an ally to the government in power. Because then it becomes censorship by surrogate. And we've seen that with Twitter, which had this massive censorship system in place. And so when you read these emails, you really see the sort of face of censorship by surrogate, of what would become government officials in some cases, calling upon a corporation to do their bidding, to silence their critics. And the underlying story was very relevant to that election. It was not just about Hunter Biden. It was a scandal involving influence peddling, one of the largest influence peddling scandals in the history of this city. And influence peddling in Washington is a virtual cottage industry.
Right.
But few of us have seen anything like this. And so they killed a story that was directly related to the Biden family and whether they cashed in on access. And it was a close election, and it might have had an impact. But at the end of the day, we have to ask, how far did this go, particularly after the Biden campaign became the Biden administration? And then you have all these usual suspects that come up, including Jim Baker. Yeah. You know, he went from the FBI, where he was part of the Russian collusion investigation. Then he goes over to Twitter. And when some people on Twitter say, gosh, I don't know if we have the basis to censor this story, Baker appears and says, well, you know what? Caution is warranted. And so once again, he seems to be at least inclined, if not eager, to see a Russian threat. And in this case, a threat that protected Joe Biden right before the election.
Yeah, and I think that's the point, is that they're running out the clock. Now, to be fair, the emails that have been put out by Matt Taibbi indicate that there were some Republicans who were making these kinds of requests. But also in there, and you also have Ro Khanna, a Democrat, who even he weighs in with Jack Dorsey saying, you know what, you can't defend this. What you're doing is just wrong. I give him credit for, in real time, calling this out. But at the same time, it always seems to go against Republicans, always against conservatives. And when there are days left in an election, to have a New York Post story taken down, not even allowed to be shared, that, it to me, is just beyond pale. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, there are redeeming characters here. I think Representative Khan is actually one of those redeeming characters. He actually says in his email, isn't this a First Amendment violation?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me that we're censoring information. And, of course, he was right. And so there were people in Twitter that said, what is our basis for this? I mean, how are we supposed to justify this?
Yeah.
But they were quickly sort of overruled, and the natural default was to do exactly what the Biden campaign had asked.
Yeah, and that's what's stunning also, that Jack Dorsey, heading up the company, seems to be late in the game and almost oblivious to everything that is going on here. But when you have the senior people, the general counsel, the head of, you know, safety or whatever they call his title at the... They all say, no, we better suppress this just in case, even though they couldn't internally find a real justification for doing so. Jonathan Turley, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Here now with more, Fox News legal analyst Greg Jarrett and former U.S. Attorney Brett Tolman. Greg, I want to start with you. You've covered this story top to bottom for a long time. You have these intersecting characters like a James Baker coming along. You know, one of the things that was absolutely stunning to me is they in one of the email chain that was put out tonight, they talk about the donations from Twitter. 96% to 99% of the donations all went to Democrats. So if you want to know where the predisposition is about where they believe who they're fighting for and voting for and donating to, I think that was a key indicator that, hey, they have a bias. You can vote. You can donate. You can be in a company. I get that. But it always goes against conservatives.
You know, early on at Twitter, they were using these computer tools for good reasons, to get rid of and weed out everything from fraud to spam to child pornography. But then people began to realize, partisans at Twitter, hey, we can use these same tools for nefarious political purposes. And what's so stunning about what we've learned today is that these top executives acted on censorship demands by not just the Democratic National Committee, but Joe Biden's presidential team. They slanted content moderation decisions, and they invented hacking out of whole cloth as a pretext. And it was completely phony, and these exchanges show it. And what Taibbi pointed out when he reported all of this just a couple of hours ago is that one of the reasons why the Democrats were so successful in gaining the censorship at Twitter is because it's staffed by progressives and liberals. That is true not just of social media, but the mainstream media as well. And they were witting accessories to this. Leslie Stahl at CBS in her famous interview with Donald Trump said, oh, the laptop can't be verified. She didn't want to verify it. Of course it can be verified. Hire a forensic specialist to examine it. Or simply and easily ask the people who sent or received emails from Hunter Biden, are these true and accurate? And if the answer is yes, and it was yes, then it's verified. And so are the contents. But she's an activist. She's not a journalist anymore, and so are many of the other people at NBC and CBS and ABC. And as I say before, they were witting accessories in this censorship campaign to help and protect Joe Biden, and it worked. The Media Research Center found that 16% of Biden voters said they would have cast their ballots differently had it not been suppressed.
Brett, you followed this. You're a former U.S. attorney. You worked on Capitol Hill at a senior position on the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know, we have Elizabeth Warren saying that now, Elon Musk is just in some cave making these decisions, but he's revealing the truth here. What strikes you about this story and the emails and texts that were revealed tonight?
Look, Jason, am I upset about the infringement and the use of government to infringe on a constitutional right? Absolutely. But that's not what angers me. What angers me is at the heart of this investigation of the Hunter Biden laptop is the potential compromise of our national security and the pay-to-play scheme that was elaborated by an insider that was being buried. And that was being not only buried, but they were turning and flipping the stage so that anybody that wanted to look into this was seen as a conspiracy theorist, was seen as someone who was not, you know, pro-America or pro-democracy. And instead, we had Twitter. I'm not surprised, Jason, that this happened, but I'm outraged because this could have been an investigation that cleaned up one of the most corrupt incidences in our nation's history. And that should have been done. And I would have loved to have been the special prosecutor that was appointed on this and would have led a team to dig into the allegations and assemble the evidence and then presented it and thrown people in jail. That's what Twitter was ignoring, was the substance and the outrageous allegations that turned out to be true.
Yeah,
on the laptop.
And the reality is the Chinese had this. The Chinese were publishing it. The Chinese were using this
Absolutely.
As a tool, and they weren't allowing the American public to understand the national security threat. I think you're absolutely spot on. Greg, Brett, thank you. Up next.
Devastating, wasn't it? I mean, this stuff is just outrageous, what they're doing now. We're going to end the program with Laura Ingraham and her coverage of this, but we're not able to play her whole clip here, but I'll put up a link that you can go and listen to that whole interview of about 3 or 4 people. And they're all commenting on this Twitter thing right now and other aspects of what's going on in our government. But anyway, here we go with that Laura Ingraham. She's awful good. Really good gal.
I'm Laura Ingram, and this is the Ingram Angle from Washington tonight. We start with the startling breaking news detailing exactly how Twitter censored the bombshell Hunter Biden laptop story in the run-up to the 2020 presidential election. But first, it's important to remember how this all began. In April of 2019, Hunter Biden dropped off three water-damaged laptops at a Delaware computer shop for repair. So after 90 days, Hunter had still not returned to pick them up. Now, it was then that the owner of that store, John Paul MacIsaac, started searching key terms like Burisma after hearing them during Trump's first impeachment trial. Well, upon finding numerous hits, Isaac contacted an intermediary who in turn contacted the FBI. In November of 2019, the FBI came to his home where he was keeping the laptops, and they reportedly made forensic copies but left the devices behind, only returned for them months later. Now, in 2020, Isaac stopped hearing from the FBI, so he reached out to congressional members who likewise ignored the findings. They remained under wraps until he contacted a lawyer of Rudy Giuliani. In October 2020, details of the hard drive were published by the New York Post. Now, due to the chain of custody of the laptop, the deep state saw a way to spin it.
More than 50 former senior intelligence officials, they said a disputed set of emails from Joe Biden's son, Hunter. They have all the classic earmarks of Russian disinformation operation.
Right-wing media has been focused on Hunter Biden, this laptop that intelligence officials have warned is likely Russian disinformation.
To say that there's no evidence this hard drive is part of a potentially Russian disinformation campaign doesn't make any sense to me.
Now, despite zero evidence of this, social media companies, Twitter chief among them, moved to stifle this story. They even suspended the New York Post Twitter account. Remember that? Well, the message had gone out. This story was not to see the light of day, and elements that did must be labeled Russian disinformation. Well, tonight, we finally learned the details about how the coordination effort unfolded. And it came in a very interesting manner. Elon Musk gave former Rolling Stone writer Matt Taibbi, currently of Substack, the reins in taking folks through all of this. Taibbi wrote, "Twitter, in its conception, was a brilliant tool for enabling instant mass communication, giving people the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. And in early conception, Twitter more than lived up to its mission. As time progressed, however, the company was slowly forced to add those barriers. Some of the first tools for controlling speech were designed to combat the likes of spam and financial fraudsters." So how did this ultimately manifest itself? Well, Taibbi, through Musk, writes, this is the bombshell here, "By 2020, requests from connected actors to delete tweets were routine. One exec would write to another, 'More to review from the Biden team.' The reply would come back, 'Handled.'" Wow. Joining me now is Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor and editor-in-chief at The Federalist, Mike Davis of the Internet Accountability Project. He also clerked for Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, and Charlie Kirk, founder of Turning Point USA. Molly, we've been waiting for this information. Obviously, we're going to learn more and more as time goes on. But what do you make of the evolution from Twitter in its early days to Twitter in the election cycle of 2020, especially in the fall, with the laptop story having been revealed?
This social media company changed so much about how we can communicate. It started out as a platform for free speech, free thought, and free debate. What happened in the 2016 election was that former President Donald Trump, then a candidate, was able to bypass the propaganda and hostility of corporate media by using social media to speak directly to the American people. And it worked, and he won election. When that happened, social media companies said they would never let it happen again. They began widespread campaigns of deplatforming, censorship, algorithmic game playing, and meddling in all of our elections on behalf of their favored Democrat candidates. This really did, I think the perfect example is this story where we are learning so much about what Twitter did to suppress free speech and debate about the Biden family business and its possible corruption that was in this Biden laptop story, and learning details. We need, you know, they're learning who was involved, how much Democrats were involved in suppressing this news that Americans had every right to know before Election Day that was kept from them by these bad actors.
Mike, I want to go to you because as you read what Matt Taibbi is releasing with his Substack, point number nine is that celebrities and unknowns alike could be removed or reviewed at the behest of a political party. Okay, then it goes on to say both parties had access to these tools. For instance, in 2020, requests from both the Trump White House and the Biden campaign were received and honored, but the system wasn't balanced. Because Twitter itself, Taibbi goes on to say, was of one political, overwhelmingly of one political orientation. So there were more channels, in other words, to complain about what conservatives were doing or Trump supporters were doing than the other way around. Your reaction tonight, Mike?
These big tech platforms have way too much power. They're too big. They're too powerful. And when you have these political actors, including government actors, that can reach out to these big tech platforms and say something is misinformation or disinformation and then gets the information censored and people deplatformed, we have serious problems. We have a First Amendment problem with this, but we just have a general problem where these big tech platforms can throw elections. And if the American people would have known what was on that laptop from hell that the New York Post got censored over, President Biden would not be in the White House today.
Well, Charlie, that's the rub, is it not? Because we know for a fact that a lot of Americans have reported that they would have reconsidered their vote had they known the extent of the Biden family corruption as a result from the Hunter Biden saga. And now we find out that because of this slant in political orientation, that's point 12 that Taibbi tweeted tonight, that, you know, we see that the assessment of current and former high-level executives was only going one way. So, again, this reveals just how the bias played out in real time during October of 2020.
Direct campaign intervention. And, Laura, what bothers, I think, so many Americans is that they thought that they were getting the whole story in the fall of 2020. When Elon Musk bought Twitter, I don't think he quite realized that he was actually buying a Democrat super PAC. You know, this puts an entirely different phrasing on the story, or on the idea of kill the story. Now you have this ability, or you had the ability as the Biden campaign, to just make a story disappear. You don't like the Hunter Biden laptop story. You don't like a story that, you know, might be a threat to your political campaign. Just email your friends at Twitter and it can vanish from the entire landscape. What we are learning is that this was interdepartmental, too. You had the former intelligence officials, 50 of them, sign a letter. You have federal law enforcement. You have Twitter. How far they went and how shaky this is on so many different levels, it will forever question and taint the 2020 election the more we learn about this. And I'm glad Elon Musk has the courage to declassify or to do the equivalent of declassification. Yeah.